Thank you, Paul, for introducing the candidates. Paul is our outgoing chairman of deacons, and Sonny. Paul introduced the candidates. Our incoming chairman of deacons, Sonny, gave the charge to the deacons. As the pastor, I have the privilege of giving the charge to the candidates and to the church. And the nature of this charge is that we want to begin with the end in mind. It's been said by so many that they have spent their life climbing a ladder just to get to the top and realize that ladder was up against the wrong building. And it could be said also with our ministry, with our lives, with our investment. We might spend all of our lives investing in the wrong thing, and we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. We want to be invested in the right things. We want to be invested in the right direction. We want to be invested with the end in mind. Candidates, you are beginning your ministry as one of the officers of the church. The Bible tells us that there are two ordained offices within the local church per God's sovereign plan. We have the office of the pastor, overseer, and we have the office of the deacon. The pastors serve the church by leading the church. The deacons lead the church by serving the church. And as our chairman just said so eloquently, we should not get those mixed up lest we attempt to exercise a gift that wasn't entrusted to us. And this is important. I'd like to say it this way. If you'll do what you're good at, I'll do what I'm good at. And indeed, the candidates, as we talked over the past weeks, I told them, listen, I need you to do what God's called you to do so that I can do what God's called me to do. And if you cease doing that, or if you try to step across the line, though you may be a help in the beginning, you'll become a hindrance in the end. It was God that set up this plan. It was God that set up that design. And we are the ones that seek to live out that. And so we want to begin with the end in mind. The king of Sparta, a couple of thousand years ago, was asked, what shall we teach our boys? And his answer was this, let's teach them that which will be most useful to them when they are men. And so I want to share with you, with the end in mind, what we hope to have at the end of the race, so that as we work our way towards the end, we will arrive at the destination that we hope for all along. So let's begin with the end in mind. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 and 8, Paul was writing, as is his custom, to Timothy in these letters, and he was writing with a reflection over where he had been, how he had done, and what he hoped for Timothy. He writes this in verse 6 of 2 Timothy chapter 4. He said, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all those who have loved his appearing. He gives the end. He gives the end to a man that is at the beginning of his ministry because he wants him to arrive at the correct place. Candidates and your wives, hear this. The definition of a deacon is this. A deacon is a peacemaker united in serving. We've heard from Acts chapter 6 the description of the beginning and the formation of the deacon body. The deacons were called by the apostles to serve them so that they could serve the people. In other words, he told the deacons, he said, listen, what we need from you is we need you to fulfill these specific responsibilities of administration and exercising care to those that are in the church so that we can maintain our work of prayer and preaching the word. So the deacons are peacemakers united in serving. Again, the reason the deacons were brought up is because there was not peace. There was discord. There was a problem. And rather than calling deacons to be problem makers, note that, he called them to be problem solvers. Deacons, you are problem solvers, and it is your call by God to bring peace among the fellowship here at Lone Oak First Baptist Church. Candidates, set yourselves to the task that whenever problems arise, and they will arise, whenever problems arise, you will set yourself to seek to find whatever solution is possible so that peace may be restored among the fellowship. Not only are they peacemakers, but they're united in serving. Do you see this band of brothers here? Let me just note, I want to be on their good side, not their bad side. Secondly, they are united. Something that I love about our deacon body is I love that when we're in the room discussing matters of the church, wisdom is expressed, opinions are shared, and they walk out together. They don't walk out of the room and say, well, we decided this, but I wasn't really with them. They don't walk out of the room and say, well, the vote was split, and we're just going to do what they want to do, because that sows seeds of discord. But when they walk out of the room, regardless of what was said in the room, when they walk out of the room, they say, we are doing this. There's no subtle language of discord. There's no suggested language of division. It is a united body that seeks to lead a united church under the headship of Jesus Christ. And as you come in, men, to this body, understand that not only are you peacemakers, but you are to be united with the work that we do. You are to be united in the work that we do. Finally, not only are they peacemakers united, but they are peacemakers who are united in serving the needs of our church. I like the way that it was so aptly put. Anytime Brother Scott calls you, answer your phone. That's a wonderful rule to live by. Any hour of day, if we feel that we need to call a deacon, we hope that you'll answer. And I can guarantee you that our ministers aren't going to be calling in the middle of the night just for fun. We're going to be calling because we need you. And not only do we need you, but we trust you in our hour of need. And it says a lot to receive a call, because it says, this man that's calling me has confidence in my ability to solve whatever issue is at hand. And so we're asking you, and you are accepting a call to be a peacemaker who is united in serving. Now, Paul gives these four words, and it's a vivid imagery that's offered for us in verse 6 and verse 7. And I want to share with you the end of Paul's journey, what he says his outcome was, and ask you to make sure that this is the end that you have in sight as you begin this journey as a peacemaker united in service. He begins and he says, first, I've been poured out. I have been poured out. He says, we want to live and love like Jesus Christ. We want to live a life that pours into others, that is generous, and we want to live lives that look like and describe a sacrificial, devoted, dedicated life to Jesus Christ. This is our goal. Our goal is to get to the end and have nothing left. Sometimes we hear it said like this, we're going to leave everything on the field. We're going to leave everything on the field. The Romans had a custom. Their custom was at the end of a meal, that they would pour out a glass of wine as a sacrifice to whatever lowercase g gods they had. Paul borrows this language as he is in prison watching so many of the Roman customs, and he says, my life is like the one of the cup of wine that's poured out for a god, except my life is being poured out for the one true living God. And friends, I want to challenge you that as you walk through this journey of being a peacemaker united in service, that it is seen that in every aspect of your life, you are allowing yourself to be a living sacrifice dedicated to the cause of Jesus Christ. He says, secondly, that he wants to have fought the good fight. Namely, he says, I fought the good fight. I've given myself to the work. And we want to be those who fight the good fight. Now, there are fights that we can fight that aren't good. That would be worthless fights. That would be unvaluable fights. But the fight that we invest ourselves in is the good fight. These are the causes that are worth fighting for. These are the people that are worth fighting for. And Paul wants Timothy to know, not only have I fought the good fight, but I charge you, fight the good fight. Invest yourself in the things that are worthy of your effort. Give yourself to slugging away at the challenges until the bell rings, and never give up until the end is there. In order for us to fight the good fight, we have to keep our eyes on Jesus. We have to keep our minds on the task, and we have to keep our hands at the plow. If we don't keep on, we will be knocked out. Deacons, ministers, let me remind you, as those that hold two of the offices of the church, as those that hold two of the offices of the church, There is no one that will give more than us. There is no one that will love more than us. And there is no one that will outserve us. We set the ceiling. We set the standard. We set the pace. And we should never expect the church to follow a lead that we're not willing to give. And if we fight the good fight, if we fight for the things that are worth fighting for, then we can look at our church and say, hey, just as we're following Jesus, will you follow us? But we must commit ourselves to fighting a fight that's worth following. He says, thirdly, finish the race. I'm finishing the race. We want to run not only with dedication, and we want to fight with surrender, but we also want to run with endurance. We want to finish. Far too many burn out, give up, or are disqualified, but I don't want any of us to burn out, give up, or be disqualified. A man was asked if he would allow a biography to be written about him before he died, and he responded, no, because I know too many men who have failed in the last lap of life. At the seminary where I graduated, they have a standing precedent that no one is allowed to write a dissertation about a man who is still living. And they're regularly challenged on that because there are so many infamous pastors and preachers and evangelists who are still living. There's so many missionaries that are still living. And if we could write a paper about them, then we'd have the opportunity to talk to them and have an in-person conversation with those that we're going to publish about. But do you want to know why? Because far too many fell in the last lap of life and they disqualify everything that was written before. Last week when I was in Virginia with several preacher friends, we were talking about the most recent brother preacher that had fallen. A man who had fallen in his faith, had given himself to temptation and had not upheld the standards that he was called to live. And as we were talking about that, I just couldn't help but say, brothers, I just want to finish. I don't have to finish first. I don't have to finish second. I just want to finish the race. You know, the Lord sees the start line, but he also keeps his eye on the finishing line because so many will begin the race, but so few will end the race. And I want to tell you, will you begin with the end in mind? Would you set as a point of priority for you, I'm going to finish this race. I'm not going to burn out. I'm not going to be pushed out. And with all the gumption that I can control, I am not going to be disqualified. I refuse to give myself to situations or to settings that would cause me to be disqualified. And brothers, let me remind us that we have every opportunity to set into place safeguards that can prevent us from being disqualified. We can put into place safeguards that prevent us from being called into question, and there's no reason for us not to be. Certainly, we think, well, I don't want to sacrifice my privacy. I don't want to give up having my ability to go and have some me time. When you accepted the call to be a deacon, you gave up all of those things. Ministers, brothers, when you accepted the call to serve Jesus publicly, you made the decision to give up all of those privileges of the private life. Our life is found in Christ. It's not found in our own gratification or satisfaction. And if you begin to think that gratification and satisfaction is an end in which you must meet, then you are already down the slippery slope that's going to lead to failure and disqualification. So you need to give it up. You need to repent and turn from those things. And we must begin, and it's not too late to start. We must begin with the end in mind, and that is we want to finish the race. Finally, he says, I have kept the faith, and I challenge you and charge you, Timothy, to also keep the faith. We have one faith, and his name is Jesus Christ. Paul held to that faith. He held to Jesus Christ as his Savior and Lord. Historically, this statement, to keep the faith, it speaks to those that were athletes or those that were in the military. For the athlete, it says, I am going to keep the faith, or I'm going to maintain the rules of the exercise or the rules of the game. For the military person, it means that I'm going to keep the oath. No matter what comes my way, I'm not going to betray my king or my country. I am going to maintain my oath. And for you and for me, our challenge, our call is to maintain the faith, to maintain the faith, to remember that our commitment is to the rules that were set before us. And you say, well, what rules are they? They were read for you from 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 8 through 13. Each of those characteristics are the rules by which we say we're going to play. You see, the qualifications and characteristics for a deacon, they're not only the characteristics that allow you to become a deacon, but they're the characteristics that must be maintained for you to remain a deacon. And if you betray any of these rules, we as a church have the right to ask you to step down. And you have verbally said that if I do anything to bring disrepute or dishonor on the name of the Lord or on Lone Oak First Baptist Church, I will voluntarily step down. And it should be so. But it's not going to be, because you are beginning with the end in mind. It's not going to be because you have decided already that you are going to pour out your life for the cause of Christ and for the benefit of his church. It's not going to be because you have committed yourself to fight the good fight all the way up until the bell rings and Jesus Christ comes home. And it's not going to be so because you are running with endurance until you finish the race. You may not be first. You may not be second. You might be limping across the finish line with me and some of these other rascals. But Lord, have mercy. Would you finish the race? We have the opportunity. It's a unique opportunity because of this ordination service. We have the opportunity to begin with the end in mind. Do you know the goal? Do you know the destination? Do you know the place where we're going? This is our task. This is our opportunity. This is our privilege. May we begin with that end in mind.